Hey everybody, welcome to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight for a discussion of Twilight. Ooh. by a lady that I imprinted on years ago, Erica Bromley.
I knew an imprinting joke would come along. I didn't think it would be right in the opening.
Did you know it would be in the first 7 seconds of the show? Listen, I don't have ton of Twilight material, but I'm going to use what I got. Okay.
Hi everybody. I wish I could hear everyone respond. Like, maybe they're saying, hi back. Like, hello, Erica.
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone who in the United States and elsewhere that celebrates Thanksgiving. We have some listeners in England. I don't think they really celebrate Thanksgiving.
No.
Well, with it being America's big F-U to Thanksgiving and all.
It's in the past.
I just said America's big F-U to Thanksgiving. Listen, it's late.
It's very late.
We're talking about Twilight. My heart's not in this, but I'm gonna give it my all. You know, what with the most recent and final installment in the Twilight saga, as it is referred to, finally coming out in theaters and making crazy amounts of money, we thought this would be a good time to go back and talk about the first Twilight because
it's a classic,
and because we haven't seen the new one.
That's true.
Remember, you can always find our website at fthismovie.net, and you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/fthismovie, follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie, and email us, thank you for the tweeting sound effect, and email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Before we talk about Twilight, Bew.
I can't wait any longer. Let's do it.
Yeah. Have you seen anything good lately? While you talk about that, I'm going to open a can of soda.
Ooh.
Not a beer.
It's Diet Coke.
Yeah. Usually Coke Zero, by the way, is the official
drink. Yeah, it's usually Coke Zero. This is really rare. Why are you drinking a Diet Coke?
Because we had a few left over, and I just needed to get rid of them.
Oh, okay. What have I seen lately? I've seen a couple things.
Yeah, you have.
Well, I haven't recorded a podcast with you for a while.
So you want to go back, like, two months to what you've seen?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've seen quite a bit since.
Yeah, definitely.
No, but in the past few weeks, I guess,
what would you talk about mostly what we watched over the weekend?
Okay. I just wanted to give a shout out to Cloud Atlas and Flight. You probably already talked about Flight.
I did, yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I got.
I mean, I know for sure that you talked about Flight because I listened to all the podcasts.
If that's what you meant to
say.
That
is what I meant. No. Listeners, it is true. I do try to listen to all the podcasts, but I'm a little bit behind.
Unfortunately, your whole life is a podcast with me because you have to listen to me all the time. So listen to one extra hour, I feel.
Because I just can't get enough.
Oh, thank you.
I just can't get enough.
Nice.
I just can't get enough.
Okay, so over the weekend, we watched a couple screeners.
We did.
And I'm going to throw out the name of the first movie only because if I had to bet, if we had cash in front of us right now.
Yes.
I'm going to bet you would not remember the name of the movie that we watched.
I would not. In fact, I don't even remember what movie you're talking about. No.
Okay. The one with John Krasinski.
Right.
And Olivia Thirlby.
Okay, wait. Don't tell me.
Okay. I'm going to sit back while you come up with the name of this movie.
Wait, this might not be the most interesting podcast if it's just me thinking about the name of the movie, though.
I'm going to let it go for a full hour.
Remember? It was...
Just throw out some
possibilities. She has short hair and she's a...
You're great at coming up with fake movies. Just throw out what you think the movie is called.
Okay. Sound Editing Love Affair?
Sound Editing Love Affair is not correct.
Okay.
Let's try one more.
California Sexy Time.
That is correct. The movie is called California Sexy Time. The movie is called...
Starring Jim from The Office.
The movie is called Nobody Walks.
Oh!
And the reason I knew that you wouldn't come up with that is because who could possibly come up with that? I don't know what the hell that title has to do with the movie necessarily.
I don't either.
It's called Nobody Walks, stars John Krasinski, Rosemarie DeWitt.
Yes.
Is that a name
yes.
of a person?
Yep.
And Olivia Thirlby, mm-hmm. the aforementioned Olivia Thirlby. And what's her name from Suburgatory? Shows up in one scene.
That's right.
but it was written by Lena Dunham, or co-written by Lena Dunham, which I guess is sort of the movie's claim to fame now that
right.
she's exploded on the
girls.
Scene because of girls.
Girls.
What was your reaction to Nobody Walks?
Hard to say. I liked things about it.
Okay.
I thought it looked nice. I was quickly... Like, engaged in the world that they sort of created.
I thought you were going to say engaged to be married, and then I thought we had some things to talk about.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Nobody walks. Wait, everybody walks? What's it called?
Nobody walks.
Nobody walks.
Everybody drives?
Everybody drives. Everyone does drive. Yeah, there are a lot of shots in that movie.
Do you suppose that's what it's about?
There are a lot of shots in that movie of Olivia Thirlby's character being driven around L.A. They're in L.A., right?
I think so.
Yeah, and she's from the East Coast.
Yeah.
Right, so she has like the short, like cool
East Coast
artist
hair.
Haircut. Yeah.
It's the New York do.
Her jeans are like just a little bit high-waisted.
A little bit from New York.
But there are a lot of shots of her in a car, a lot of scenes that just consist of her being driven around, looking out the window as music plays.
Did you like the movie?
I didn't hate it.
Okay.
Yeah. I just feel like right now we're talking about it, and I only remember certain things about it. But as a whole, I don't feel like I remember.
Walking.
I remember nobody. I remember the L.A. car scenes. I remember some of the character scenes in the recording studio. I remember some of the looks on Rosemary DeWitt's face.
Do you think you don't remember anything major about it because it was a hollow movie free of any substance and entirely about pretentious services?
I think that's probably right, although I wouldn't have phrased it that way.
Ridiculous navel-gazing. Here's the thing about the movie.
I think the people who made it, well, oh, I don't want to be mean to Lena Dunham, though.
Why not?
Because she's
she wrote
girl.
A shitty movie. She might be a great girl. I don't know her at all.
I know
you
her.
Like her show.
Yeah.
That doesn't make her a great girl.
She's awesome.
Unless you're using, like, capital G, like she's a great girl, like me calling Matt LeBlanc a great friend. But I'm mostly referring to his... Okay, anyway. I did not like the movie Nobody Walks.
Okay.
Really at all.
No,
and you're right. The performances are fine.
Mm-hmm.
The movie looks good, and it has the indie soundtrack. It reminded me of, like, Laurel Canyon.
Yes, but not... I liked Laurel Canyon a lot. I think I was the only person. Anyone out there listening, did anyone else like the movie
Laurel Canyon? Well, you're
just
a sucker for this kind of movie.
I definitely am. I bought the soundtrack to Laurel Canyon.
Well, listen, who wants to forget any of the great music from the movie Laurel Canyon? Alessandra Nivola, I think, had a band in that movie.
Yes,
so some of those songs are probably on there.
Yes, they are.
The reason that these movies went to the top of the stack of the screeners was because I know you like certain kinds of movies.
I do appreciate, I am thankful for you knowing what I like.
Well, listen, that's how I do. I know you like Twilight, so I'm
let's
do a podcast.
well, that's torture.
I don't want to spend too much time on Nobody Walks,
no,
but I didn't like it. And part of the problem is that it's like 12 years too late. Like, if this movie came out in 2000, I might be like, oh yeah, that's
interesting. Yeah, you're right.
But, like, you can't make fucking Nobody Walks anymore.
No.
And it's just, it's rich people whining. And I don't mean to suggest that... You can't make a movie about people with money having problems, because people with money
friends
also have
money.
Problems, and they have relationship problems. So their station in life does not dictate, you know, their relationship status. I'm not saying you can't make a movie about these things, but it just felt like just wow. Yeah. It's about like really selfish people behaving. Selfishly, which, again, you can make a movie about, but you have to be able to find something to say about it. And this movie didn't.
Right. It doesn't have anything really to say about it. I mean, really, I guess it just says, like, things happen, or here,
it's entirely based around how much John Krasinski wants to have sex with Olivia Thirlby, right?
You gave so much away, I wasn't going to give it away, but I was going to say...
I didn't say they have sex, I just said he wants to have sex with
True,
her.
Okay. I was just going to say that in the movie, there's a character who shows... desire for another character.
Really? You really have to be... We
can
have to
cut
talk
that out.
Around it that much. John Krasinski wants to have sex with Olivia Thirlby.
Right, but also she kind of... It starts out like she kind of comes on to him, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not giving... Well, whatever.
She... Here's... You could summarize the problem with
the
movie.
It just doesn't... Where does it come from? There's no chemistry.
You could summarize the problems with the movie thusly. She plays, like, a New York artist, and she's doing some sort of, like, art installation that involves, like, a film or a video project, and he's helping her with the sound.
Oh, yeah, he's the
sound
guy. And
every time they show footage from her movie, it's, like, black and white, extreme close-up of, like, ants crawling. And that is some, like, pretentious 90s... idea of like what an art film might be. It's nonsense, and the movie never gets any deeper than that. There is one thing in the movie that I think I kind of like, and that is where I don't want to give too much away, but at one point, John Krasinski admits that he might be confusing his respect for her work, you know, the ants, with romantic feelings for her. And I was like, oh, that's a thing that happens.
Yeah.
Okay. That's like great. The one almost honest movie moment in the movie.
Right.
But I want to move on because then we immediately watched the same movie with different actors and called something else.
Oh, no. And Take This Waltz.
Yes. From earlier this year, directed by Sarah Polley, starring Michelle Williams and Seth Rogen and Sarah Silverman doing the full spano.
Yeah. A lot of ladies were.
Yeah, they really were. The movie's been talked about a couple times on this podcast. I think JB talked about it when he saw it. Was not really a fan. I think Alex talked about it when he saw it. Was a big, big fan.
Okay.
How about you weigh in?
I'm in the middle.
Oh, interesting. Right between JB and Alex, where you've always wanted to be.
Let's all think about that for a moment. Woohoo! I don't know where I fall on the spectrum here of loving the movie. I have found myself thinking a lot about it.
Okay.
But some of my questions are still unanswered, and while I don't think that questions have to be answered every single movie, and sometimes I like it that they're not, I just don't totally get what this movie was trying to say. Although I on a very simple level, it's obvious what it's trying to say. I don't know if I can say it without giving it away.
Yeah, well, it's just that some people are in unhappy marriages, that some people...
Right, well, isn't there the shower scene where all the ladies are bathing, and I'm guessing that most of the listeners have already seen at least a couple screen captures of that.
I know Doug has.
Well, and I have, too, so before I watched the movie. So I figured the rest of you are in on that, right? And why not? Why shouldn't you be? Okay. I think during that scene, someone says, new is shiny. And a stranger in the bathroom, in the shower, says, new gets old.
And the stranger is an older woman.
True. So we assume she's what?
On one side of the shower are the young, shiny women.
Uh-huh.
And on the other side are the old women. And look, their bodies are now sort of wrinkled and sagging. And look, it gets old.
One of those older bodies was really shiny, though, because she had a lot of
soap. Well, listen.
I was paying close attention.
you were looking at the wrong side of the shower.
Oh.
You were supposed to be looking at the other.
Oh, okay.
Side. I mean, it's fine. No, it's fine. It's totally fine.
So, new is shiny, new gets old, right? That can be the theme for the entire movie.
Yeah, I think so.
And, okay, so going back, I liked things about it. I like that I've been thinking about it.
Yeah.
There are certainly scenes that I could find many women just loving because it's sort of a fantasy of what they want to happen to them or what they want to hear in their own lives. And hopefully these women all will have heard these things that they want to hear in their lives at some point. But it's not enough to just want to hear those things or to hear those things. It's not enough to just have that part of it. You have to have more than just the words that sound good or the chemistry, I guess, that feels right at the time. I don't know if that makes sense, but...
Don't you feel like the movie would have succeeded better, though, if it had any of that stuff? I mean, Williams is married to Seth Rogen, who's really good, by the way. Seth Rogen's great.
Yeah.
He
cooks chicken.
He does. And, you know, they're kind of a young married couple. They've been married like 5 years, and... She meets a guy who pulls a rickshaw, and they hit it off. And part of my problem with the movie,
cuteness in this movie.
Oh my god, the whole movie.
But
is
I actually feel that when
nonsense.
Yeah, well, I feel okay. Let me just say a couple things real quick.
Right.
I feel like when she and the other guy whose name I can't remember,
rickshaw
guy.
His first name is Rick. His last name is Shaw.
Okay, when they meet, I don't see the chemistry that I think we are supposed to see and
That's
feel.
That's part of the problem with the movie.
Just two people talking to each other and looking at each other. And one guy making sort of a little smile doesn't mean, like, instant chemistry it's meant to be or anything like that,
right.
Okay? So I felt like it was missing something there. And I think if that had been fixed, I would have been a lot more with it because
you would sympathize a little bit more for Michelle
Williams. Right.
You would say, like, I kind of understand what she sees in this guy. Instead of she's clearly looking for anyone else and is selfish and the worst.
Okay, there's Patrick's take. And moving on to Twilight.
I thought the movie in like the last 20 minutes tried to sort of focus in on its thesis, and I think its thesis is kind of interesting and worth making a movie about, and Sarah Polley says some things that I think are worth saying, but I think it takes so long to get there, and the movie had really frustrated me up to that point, mm-hmm. that it was really hard to win me back at that point.
Okay, a couple things. We did talk about one thing. We feel like maybe had we seen this movie again, like, what, 12 years ago?
Or not immediately after that other garbage movie.
Right, right, that maybe the reaction would have been more positive. Yeah. Although, again, I think mine was slightly more positive than yours.
Because watching them back-to-back, it became one four-hour epic of wow.
Right, right, yes. Going back, I loved this. It was Toronto, right? Supposed to be Toronto, or was it Toronto?
Yeah, I think it was Toronto.
Okay. It's this ideal little... adorable.
Everyone travels by rickshaw.
The whole movie is pretty much sunny. Everybody looks like they're sweating all the time. I didn't know it was that hot in Canada. Maybe it's just the summer, right?
Oh, Canadian, that Canada heat.
Canadian listeners, tell me. And also, tell me where it's really nice, because maybe one day I'm going to move there. Okay. So, well, I don't have to worry about that for a while. Right.
Moving in 4 more years.
I'm making jokes, but actually, Canadians, I really do want to visit you soon. So
yes,
hook me up. Hook up. Wifey up.
All hot, TH. Make it happen.
So the whole movie just seems really hot and sweaty, sunny, that's great. And he drives he pushes a rickshaw, which I didn't think was a thing anymore.
It's so quirky.
And they all live in these adorable places that can't be inexpensive. I don't know. Seth Rogen is trying to publish his cookbook, right?
Yes, about 50 ways to cook chicken.
How do they afford where
they're
living?
That's a thing. No, it's a thing. I'll tell you how. Universal healthcare.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, you guys know it all up there. Well, and the movie opens with a hot, sweaty kitchen scene. And then near the end of the movie, that scene comes back. And did I just give too much away?
I don't think so.
Oh my God, I'm sorry, you guys.
Yeah. At 2 points in the movie... characters are in a kitchen.
Many
spoilers.
Points, which is fine. It's totally fine. And I like it. Okay, it kind of comes back to that scene, and then you think about everything that's happened and, like, okay, what's the bigger point here? And part of me thinks that it's not just that, okay, new is shiny, new gets old, but that new gets old, but in a good way. I mean, I couldn't tell what really they were trying to say, but like you get comfortable in a happy way. So yeah, it may not be like the craziness of the beginning of the relationship, especially what they showed at one point in the film. But I don't know. I don't know. And maybe they didn't have to tell us. Maybe that's the point. We don't need to know for sure whether it's happily ever after or not.
Right. I'm all for ambiguity.
Yeah, right.
I like ambiguity, but the movie tries to have it too many ways. Again, without giving anything away, the last moments of the movie sort of play out on one character's face. And that face goes through a series of sort of expressions and emotions. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that done before, right? And I think, that's great. I love it. I mean, you think of Melora Walters just looking up and smiling at the end of Magnolia.
Right.
It's the greatest thing ever, right? And this, I just feel like it's just trying to have it too many ways, because it's like, I don't know exactly what I want the audience to feel, so I'll just let them feel everything.
Right.
So
yeah.
If you want it to be this, you read this. And if you want it to be this, you read this. And not because, you know, I mean, lots of movies do that because it's sort of in the interpretation of the viewer. But this movie offers you all of those things by going through. It's a smile, and then it's a frown, and then it's a weird stare. It would be like at the end of The Graduate
Right.
If Ben and what's-her-name went through,
yes.
Elaine went through just 6 different facial expressions while they're sitting on the back of the bus.
Right.
Like, no,
right.
no, no. They just do the one, and you can read it.
Right. And it's very memorable and
right. Just
effective.
Like Take This Waltz.
Well,
what I'm saying is Take This Waltz is the new Graduate.
And real quick, one more thing about the movie. Again, it looks so pretty.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to walk into their neighborhood and sort of stay there, which I also felt that way about another movie that was filmed in Canada.
Hmm.
What was it?
Hmm.
Possibly with a lot
the
of nudity
sweet,
as well.
Oh, The Sweet Hereafter.
No.
No?
No.
You want it to be a bus driver?
Nope.
No? Do
nope.
I have this wrong? Where's my Sweet Hereafter, peeps?
Woo!
Who are cracking up at these jokes.
There is a guy out there. There he is.
His name is Adam McGoyne. nudity in Canada. I got
By
nothing.
The way, do you remember when I bought...
Yes, family viewing
yes.
and next of kin.
Yes,
like
I was like obsessed.
Adam
I had to own
feature.
Those, and then they went
have
on my
we
shelf.
Have you ever watched either one of them?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think I have.
But it was so important to me to buy them. I don't know what happened. Okay.
We should move on.
But I wanted to say that...
Oh, yeah.
That, I know what I was saying. That there was another Canadian... A couple of films, actually. When... What's the movie with Jim Krasinski? Jim from The Office.
Yeah.
And Maya Rudolph.
Away We Go.
Yes, Away We Go. There's a part in Canada, too, that's really sad, right?
Yes.
And, but Canada's cool. And then
Canada is only associated with
and
sadness.
And then, no. Yeah. And what about the movie where there's also lots of nudity, but crazy Julianne Moore and what's-her-face sex scene?
Yeah, Amanda, that's Anna McGoyan. Chloe.
Chloe, yeah, that's McGoyan. Canada, too.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Canada.
Canada, the home of lesbianism and where children go to die.
One more thing about Take This Waltz. So I was saying, it looks great.
Yeah.
Everyone in the movie carries himself or herself in a way that is, like, so free-spirited and laid back. And while I know that that exists in the world, that's great.
It's everyone we knew that lived in the city in their 20s. Like,
right. It just feels like it's too much of a production team's, like, fantasy of how they all wish they were living too. And maybe I'm totally wrong. Someone out there might right now be, like, living in a little block that's cute and adorable and they can walk to.
No, all of Michelle Williams' dresses and
Right. And again, that's adorable. It looks like the mom blogs that are really popular. Like, if you, or the, you know, the... Yeah, anyway.
In the movie, the way that the colors are saturated in the movie looks like...
It looks like the current style of photography that is really popular and that everybody wants their family to be taken in that picture because it looks great.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So, great looking movie.
So you liked it more than me.
Great nudity.
But you're still trying to figure out how you feel about it.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I think... I wish it wasn't so ambiguous, or I wish it wasn't... So all over the place, like you said.
Do you ever see yourself coming around to a point where you really like it?
I don't know.
The more you think about it?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think, like, he can't be a rickshaw driver or whatever. Like, that, no. Who does that?
Great. No, it's great. Come on. Yeah. You know.
Twilight.
Yeah, all right, so let's talk about Twilight.
The fans that are listening right now?
The Twilight fans are you talking about?
No,
were you going somewhere with that?
Yeah, the fans that are listening right now, they just can't wait any longer to get to Twilight. So let's talk about Twilight. Can I start by saying that I've never read the books?
I haven't, full disclosure, I've
never read the books.
And we really haven't seen... I saw the second movie because I had to review it, which is one more than you've seen because you've only seen Twilight.
Right.
And then we haven't seen any of the rest of it. I saw... What's the second one? New Moon. Which is super boring.
And I'm open-minded. I'm a very open-minded person. I like to see everything, but for some reason, these movies just...
Well, it's not...
They don't become a priority.
But that's not necessarily being closed-minded. I don't think... I mean, you saw the first one. You've now seen it a couple of times. It's not like you've just decided, oh, Twilight, I'm never going to see that. Like, you gave it a chance, and not liking it...
Right.
Is the reason that you didn't see the sequels, you know? Because why, if you hate the first chapter of... Well, I don't know.
No, so keep reading the book, even if you hate the first chapter.
Yeah, no,
okay?
I'm down.
Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay.
Is the first chapter horrible?
It's not horrible, but it doesn't really get everybody into it. Listen, you know? I am that way. I will continue to read a book, even if I hate the first chapter.
And I will watch an entire movie. I won't walk out of the theater.
Yeah, even if I don't like the first 10 minutes, half hour, whatever. You got to see it all the way through. So what we're not going to do is just sit around and be superior to Twilight and rip on Twilight just for existing or, oh, it's just nonsense for teenage girls, even though it's kind of nonsense for teenage girls. But the problem is that it's bad nonsense for teenage girls.
Yes.
Like, I recognize that I might not be the target audience for Twilight, but at the same time, like, a good movie is at least recognizable to all audiences.
Right.
While it may not be made for me, I could at least say I recognize how that works. And I don't think Twilight works.
How do we even begin discussing Twilight? Like, do we start with lip biting?
Well,
or, like... eyes that look out of the sides
because
of the
Here's the problem with Twilight. I think we could tackle it on two different levels, assuming we can stay awake long. Is that we can tackle it just on the level of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And on that level, it's pretty terrible.
It's so dark and...
Yeah.
Not inspired.
But then there's also sort of a thematic level, which we could probably spend way more time on, but I'm almost reluctant to even get into because it's like, it's almost more than I can address, I think.
There is a piece, and I don't remember who wrote it or where it was. I swear, years ago you sent it to me.
Yeah, it was Film Crit Hulk.
Okay, yes.
And I think it's just called, like, Film Crit Hulk versus Twilight. It's very long, but it's amazing, and he really takes down all of the things that are sort of almost dangerous about some of the ideology presented in the Twilight movies.
I wish I would have reread that before we recorded the podcast. So everybody just go out and find that.
A lot of it is really just actually...
But finish listening to us first.
It's just a takedown of Stephanie Meyer's writing and how bad it is. And he says it's written without purpose or intent. And she just scribbles down, this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. And how the whole story came to her in a dream. And so... it's almost written that way. It's like it's somebody just recounting the stuff that happened in their dream. because there's no characterization. There's no plot to speak of.
Can we just talk about things like in a random order? Or?
Yeah, I think so. We probably will be spoiling Twilight.
Oh, yeah.
So my guess is if you're listening to this, you've already seen Twilight or you will never see Twilight. And either way, you don't care if it gets spoiled. So if you plan to see it, you don't want things spoiled. Tune out. We will not be spoiling elements from the later films because, again, we haven't seen them. We don't know what happens.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry,
gosh, I don't know where to start.
All right.
So Bella.
Mm-hmm. Bella Swan.
Bella leaves. Yeah, Bella Swan, which again is like this fantasy of like what a girl thinks her name should be because she's a beautiful swan.
And it's
Bella
very hard
means
to remain open-minded because I'm already throwing up in my mouth.
Right.
Like, I don't want to just put my guard up and be like, nope, fuck you, Bella Swan, I'm out.
Right.
So let's move past the
Okay, so Bella Swan comes to live with her dad in, where are they?
Forks, Washington.
Right, okay.
It's like a suburb from, of Seattle,
she's from Phoenix or Arizona?
Doesn't
it is
matter.
In Arizona. okay. Bella Swan moves in with her dad, and the town is dark and wet and rainy.
The whole thing is shot through this horrible, like, gray filter that sort of drains all the color. And again, I recognize they're vampires, so it's not real colorful. Or the town has to be cloudy because they're vampires, and when they're in the sun, they sparkle like diamonds. And so it's the way to, like, address all that. But it makes for a pretty drab visual experience.
Wait, doesn't he walk into the sun at one point to show her this is what I look like in the sun? And he like pulls open his shirt, I think, or something.
Yeah, and he sparkles.
And then she says,
It's like diamonds.
Even
though
you're so beautiful.
Yeah.
And or it's beautiful.
No, I think it's you're beautiful.
You're beautiful.
I really think it is. The fact that she has to say it's like diamonds is such a microcosm of everything that's stupid about this movie, where it gives the viewer just...
Oh my god, I thought it was like diamonds too!
Right? She said what I was thinking
god.
And seeing. yes, anyway, back to the...
So when she goes to the school and she's, you know, she's new, she doesn't know everybody, so she's a little bit awkward. I get that, but everything's just, that for the whole movie, is like exaggerated awkwardness. She looks down,
well,
she looks
it's
up.
Kristen Stewart.
Right. When the day that she first meets Edward, he's in the science classroom and she walks in and he smells her perfume, right? Because
there's
a fan on
in
the cold, rainy town. The fan is blowing her hair in that moment and that he gets the whiff that he smells her and he can't control it. So you have to see that him like trying so hard not to go after her, turn into
like
a vampire.
Pretty much.
My
gosh. It's a hilarious reaction.
It's really, really bad.
I think somebody on YouTube made a whole like montage of all his jizz in my pants moments.
Oh my God. I didn't
Search
know that.
That. Yeah.
All right.
It's ridiculous. And again, he can read minds, but he can't read her mind.
Right.
And she smells better to a vampire, not like a perfume, but like her scent, you know, in air quotes, smells better than any other human. And again, it's just this nonsense where it's like, so she's the perfect woman. He was destined to meet her because she's special.
Mm-hmm.
But those two qualities...
Hear that, ladies?
Right. Like, if I can't read Erica's thoughts. and she smells great. So therefore, that's why we got married.
Woohoo!
But honestly, those two qualities, which are assigned through weird exposition, made up vampire rules, mm-hmm. Take the place of any actual characterization.
Right.
Because there's nothing else to the character of Bella Swan, and there's no other reason why Edward Cullen would be in love with her. What draws him to her is that he can't read her thoughts and she smells great.
I wonder if someone who's listening, who's read the book, is thinking, you guys don't get it. There's so much more to that.
That's probably true.
Right. That could
I guess we don't get it.
Right.
I guess we're wrong, or is it a failure of storytelling?
Maybe it's just the movie. Maybe the book told it better.
Maybe, but
yeah.
What we're talking about is the movie. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, like, yeah, no, right, right.
When people point to the book, it's like...
It just seems so ridiculous.
You can't brag about the movie. The book addresses that, but the movie doesn't. We're
it
talking
just
about
seems
movie.
So ridiculous, because then she's immediately, like, fascinated or curious right. about him right. and his reaction, and then right. he doesn't show up at school for days, and she's, like, fixated on right. where is he? Why hasn't he come
but
back? Like, why would she even be paying attention?
Right.
Right, right.
He's only rude to her. Like, he's deliberately trying to push her away.
And then, wait, does he save her from the car?
Yeah.
Okay, that's, like, then is that the first
her,
thing?
That's the first time he saves
that,
her.
Is that when they start talking, then, and actually hanging out? And
no,
she's just
they don't actually
asking
start
questions?
Hanging out until he, like, saves her from the young punks.
Oh, right, right. When she was supposed to be at the bookstore, or maybe she was, but it
or prom dress shopping.
They were prom dress shopping, and it was
eat.
Light out, and then all of a sudden it was dark, and she's with these punks,
right.
and he saves her, and then they go to the
because
restaurant,
girls
and her friends
need
are done
be saved
eating.
A lot.
Yes.
Like, a lot, girls. You're so lucky you have us boys.
It is such a fantasy for
no, no,
girls
no.
who and obviously young girls, they haven't had these sorts of, like, adult good relationships yet. So I get it. It is kind of like this little fantasy for them, but it's scary that...
Right. Why not present...
There's other lessons they're learning along with just the dream
right.
of the fantasy or whatever that aren't good.
Why not present a male protagonist who wants to get to know you or who makes you laugh? Or, I don't know, you know, I'm all for presenting a fantasy, that's fine,
right.
if that's what you want to do, but it's creating a worldview in the minds of its young readers that unfortunately perpetuates a problem that is already very persistent in our culture right now, which is just that young, I won't say just girls, young people are so at the center of the universe, as far as they are concerned, and their lives are very, very dramatic. And that's the thing about this movie, is that it piles on all this drama where there isn't actually any drama. Like, there's no real drama. I guess the central conflict for the first half of the movie is Edward is drawn to Bella, but he can't be because he'll bite her and never stop. And so he acts like an asshole. And I guess that's the...
Right.
So it's just, immediately, relationships are filled with drama. And guys will be mean to you, but it's really
because really,
they like
they love you.
You
so much.
Right. It just, and again...
And he's trying to protect you. And then he saves you. And he's trying to protect you by not having sex with
and
you.
And we're putting too much, because we could probably do this with any movie. Like, we're probably putting too much pressure
sure.
on... Twilight to teach
sure.
every lesson to young
right,
girls.
Yeah, no,
you know?
I know.
Like,
yeah.
The movie's just a movie, but it's endemic of a bigger issue, and because it's become such a phenomenon, and because I really do think it's shaping the worldview of many young people, particularly women, I think it's worth talking about some of the ideas that are presented in
well,
the movie.
Even the fact that, like, she then has to keep his secret, or that, you know, he's mean to her, but she won't stop, like, almost going after him.
Right.
Like,
and,
he's
and
treating
again,
her
why?
Really badly in the beginning, but she keeps going after him. Oh, I've seen that happen before, you know,
right.
like, oh, this
the
guy's...
The first time that you and I really talked, and obviously, like, I
yeah,
thought
yeah,
were
let's remember.
Super pretty.
Oh,
so there is the... physical component. You know what I mean?
Sure.
The way that a lot of times people will strike up a conversation because they find the other person physically attractive.
You had a rockin' late 90s goatee.
But the first time we talked, you know, it was about Boogie Nights.
And, yes.
And this was in like 97 or, you know, and Boogie Nights wasn't what Boogie Nights is now, and most people in our age group weren't huge fans of Boogie
right.
Nights at that point. So I was like, holy shit, another person not to mention a smoking hot girl who's way into Boogie Nights, I want to talk to her more. It's not even like, oh my God, I love her and I will never stop trying to be with her at that point.
When you kept rescuing me from, that came like, later. Things.
But at least there was like an entry point. There was like a thing. Right. There was that a genuine connection. To get to know you right. more. That's
right.
all.
Right.
They never even have that.
No.
It's like, I guess she finds him handsome because women find Robert Pattinson very handsome.
Well, I guess she's intrigued by, like, his weird behavior around her, but then he's just mean to her, but she, right. like, doesn't give up on it. She right. is, like, in so focused on, you know, well, tell me what's wrong, or tell me this, tell me that, I don't know. Right. And then as she finds out more, it's all sort of dangerous, and she has to keep it a secret. And I just think that that's a metaphor for so much in terms right. of, like, teenage relationships and what they think is means. I've had students tell me before, because I work with high school students, I've had students tell me, like, well, relationships are really hard work. And I think to myself, they're young, and that's fine. But, like, they're not that hard of work if they're working well. Like, if the relationship is a good one, it's not that hard. I mean, sure, everyone has their ups and downs, but again, the whole movie feeds into this whole dramatic, like, if we're not experiencing drama and, like, pain, if nothing,
right.
then what is there to, like, you know, sob over and then make right. up, or I don't know.
But then
know.
It becomes Take This Waltz, and it's like, then it's boring.
Right, right,
and
right.
We
right.
have to find a guy who pulls a rickshaw. By the way, everything that we're talking about, is in the first half of the movie, and I would argue that's the half that almost kind of works.
Like, you know what? You said to me that you felt like the movie worked.
Not worked. Until,
not worked.
Just
okay.
wasn't horrible.
Right, because I was talking about like, yeah, you know, really in the beginning, I'm kind of with it, you know? It's like, okay, sure. She moves to this new town. You're following right. this girl. She doesn't totally fit in. She doesn't know a lot of people. There's maybe some weird history with her parents, and now she's with her dad, whatever. But, and it's shot in a way that, like, yes, it's dark and rainy, but it's okay. Then after he comes out as a vampire,
right.
things change, and that's yeah. part of the story. But even yeah. the photography, I feel like, that whole baseball scene.
Well, oh, hold on. You're getting ahead okay. of, you're getting ahead of us, because there's a scene I have to talk about before that. Yeah, I mean, Kristen Stewart is not the worst in that first, like, half hour. And again, I have to think it's because that's before her life is fraught with drama. And then once mm-hmm. it is, then it just becomes a series of, like, blank stares and lip pulling and awkward hair movement and staring, and they're like placeholders where human beings should be, her and Robert Pattinson. But in the first couple minutes, she's just sort of a normal teenager, you know?
Right.
And that's one of the things that I would actually give Catherine Hardwicke credit for. She, of course, was fired after the movie came out. Mm. Like, and the movie was a huge hit. I remember seeing the trailer, knowing that Twilight was this huge phenomenon. And I saw the trailer, and I thought it looked so bad. I don't mean the story, because
mm-hmm.
Obviously that wasn't going to appeal to me, but just the filmmaking,
right.
it looked so bad and cheap, and you compare that with, like, Harry Potter. It's like, Harry Potter's this huge phenomenon, and they make a movie out of it, or Lord of the Rings, or whatever, and you're like, holy shit, that's an event. Like, right. they really put some care into this.
Right.
Twilight didn't feel money.
Yeah,
but Twilight didn't feel like that at no. all. It was like they found three unknown actors and shot them in gray. And it just looked
running
like...
running through a lot of gray.
So I really thought it was not going to be successful. And of course, I was wrong because it's like the biggest thing ever. So whatever. But Catherine Hardwicke at least attempts to ground some of the ridiculous sort of supernatural conflict in within the teenage experience, and that's some of what we're taking the movie to task for, I think,
right.
that it conflates teenage love with this ridiculous, like, I can't be with you because I'm a vampire and you're not. But that's fine if you're going to make that the metaphor for your movie about why people should remain abstinent or something. Thank you, Stephanie Meyer, you Mormon genius. But she at least seems concerned with not just these characters who can't be together because he's a vampire and she's adult, but with trying to present sort of an idea of what it's like to be a teenager. I mean, not really, and maybe I'm just
right, but like
her,
when she goes to school and she's the new girl, then she right. starts hanging out with those other girls.
And maybe I'm just giving her bonus points because she made 13, and it's like, oh, Catherine Howard right. knows oh, something yeah. about this, you know.
Right.
But she seems to a little bit, And of course they fired her from that. And then you get a series of directors. I only saw the second movie, but Chris Weitz, I think, made the second one and just takes the material completely at face value. And, you can't do that because it's nonsense.
Okay. You know how I mentioned the obvious that like he eventually told her his secrets and then she had to keep these secrets. And so there's something sort of like challenging about this. This is another sort of cliche, I guess, in the world that like, oh, if you love him enough, you can make it better. So right. There's these challenges, but like, if I just keep loving him, he'll change, or you know, love will see it all, you know.
And that's even before she learns his secret. That's like when he's acting
When he's being an asshole. Oh, and she's like, no, I'll just
loving him.
Right, right.
And then he'll change.
Right. And then
he'll come around and be nice to me.
Right. So then he professes that he, how did he say it? Like, I forget the exact line. Shoot. But okay. So now she's a secret to keep. So that's sort of like dangerous, and that's fun and exciting too. And then later in the movie, she has to leave her dad and she's not allowed to tell her dad why, right?
Yes.
Remember that someone's after her. And so she has to like go home, pack a bag and leave.
Okay.
And I know the dad is like outside our room showing concern and the only way he knows how. And he's asks, well, did he break up with you? And she says, no. And then she's hurrying, like putting everything in her bag. And he says, well, did he hurt you? And she says, no, I don't know what the order is. But eventually she says, I broke up with him, which is a lie. But she says that and she's not comfortable lying to her dad, but she has to do it and she has to leave. So the next scene she leaves, she's driving away in her truck, her quirky truck. And then Edward's in the truck with her. And I thought to myself, oh, so in another movie about teenage love where it's like against the parents, the girl or the guy, they, you know, one of them, they leave the home of the parents and we are siding with them because we want their love to work, but we might blame the other one who made them leave their parents. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Like there's a little bit of that where you're like, oh, he's the bad guy or oh, she's the bad girl getting him.
Or just but nothing here, else, we recognize that they're making a mistake.
Okay, right. But here in Twilight, she has to lie to her dad. She has to leave because it still has to do with Edward protecting her and keeping her safe. So again, we're rooting for her to run away from home with the guy.
Right. There's no part of us that's like you're doing the wrong thing, abandoning your father.
Right. Or that you've done something
for you.
That was wrong.
Because she's doing something noble.
Right.
Everybody's
so
fucking noble. So
I feel like the story just continues to give the audience like reasons to support like erratic decision making and bad choices in relationships.
Selfish actions.
That's
what the movie comes down to.
Right.
We get to the scene where he has to explain that he's a vampire, where she puts it all together because there's a montage of her doing research, which is hilarious, by the way. Where she figures out that he's a vampire by doing research.
I did appreciate, though, seeing the real Google page.
Sure.
Do they still show that in movies?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay.
Maybe not.
I feel like sometimes it's fake.
I thought for sure she'd be on Ask Jeeves. I mean, the movie came out a couple years ago. It's essentially just the two of them in a field asking questions of one another. And it's almost like Catherine Hardwicke is so concerned that that is not interesting enough or dramatic enough that she begins swirling the camera all over the place and waving shit around. It's the craziest, most nonsensical way to film two people having a boring conversation.
Well, you have to give it some excitement.
Right? I mean, it's either she's compensating for how dull it is, or it becomes self-parody, where she's like, haha, isn't this funny? Like, how ridiculous I'm making this stupid conversation look. I tend to think it's the former. Maybe she's some crazy genius. And the way that she shoots that is actually just subverting the garbage content of the dialogue. But I think it's the first one. That, for me, is the scene where the movie really jumps the rails. I've seen the movie now 3 times. We watched it once, I think, when it came out on DVD, just to give it a chance. Hey, let's see what this Twilight thing's all about. I watched it a second time. I watched it a second time. Because I think I was going to write a column or something about it for this. And now we've watched it a third time for this podcast. I've seen it 3 times. I have little to no idea what happens in the second half of this movie. And some of that is on me because I just check out because mm-hmm. it's so boring. But a lot of that, I feel like, is really on the plotting of the movie. Because, again, it's not like A leads to B leads to C. And these aren't my thoughts, but Film Crit Hulk points it out, where it's just this stuff that happens that isn't necessarily tied to what came before or what comes after, if that makes sense. It's just a series of, like, sort of ideas for scenes, and it introduces a villain.
That makes sense, though, when you think about what we were talking about earlier, how it's all fantasy. It's just like, ooh, I want to put this in, or ooh, I want to
see where the vampires play baseball, and it's the craziest, stupidest thing you've ever seen in your life.
Everything looks silly. It's really, really silly.
And again, is Catherine Hardwicke turning this into comedy? Does she know how silly this is? And does the audience who's loving this movie know how silly it is? Are there teenage girls who sit there and are like, I want to play vampire baseball. It looks like so much fun.
No, they don't say that, but they just go along with it because it's what's put on the screen. They don't, you know, I think people just accept it. I thought it looked really, I thought the scene looked really ugly and cheap.
Yeah.
And like a made-for-TV movie without any lighting.
Well, because like, they're all using special powers to play baseball. They have to play during a lightning storm.
Isn't there a song, like some of the lyrics are like
they have to play during a lightning storm because like they hit the ball so hard that people would hear or something. So it's covered up by the lightning. It's just so stupid.
After the baseball scene, though, I feel like there's the scene where she's prom dress shopping, right? Yeah.
I think that comes before. Yeah, that might again, be before.
All I know is that after she leaves her dad's house, doesn't she end up in like that sort of garage with, and then
I'm having a hard time remembering.
The girl named Rosalie.
Yes.
She gets upset for a second. She doesn't want it because Edward's basically telling everyone like, do this, do that. We need to protect her. And at one point Rosalie says,
why?
Well, like, she's not my girl, or I don't have to, I don't know what she said, but someone says, well, she's Edwards or something. I don't know. I apologize, audience, for not remembering verbatim these lines. But so then they put her in a car and they're going to drive her away. And Edward leans in and I wish I could remember exactly what he said, but it was like, I'm for you now, or everything I do is for you.
Isn't that how it should be?
Right. And it's just, but everyone's just like shoving around, like doing things for this girl. And then they're escaping with her. And then that's where I blank out. Like, I can't remember what happens, but I do remember that the movie ends with a lot of twinkling white lights, which are beautiful, and they're dancing.
Yeah, well, again, you're jumping a little
I'm jumping way ahead.
A little bit ahead.
Right, way ahead.
Because, yeah, the Rosalie character, who I think is played by Nikki Reed.
Yes. Who was in 13.
Exactly. Who like, co-wrote 13, which is crazy.
Right.
Is in that scene, sorry, it's late.
Diet Coke.
I don't think I ever like started losing my voice on the podcast.
Hey, this is what
Twilight has driven me to. it's because I screamed about this movie for 3 days.
No, happy screaming.
Yes, exactly.
Twilight!
In that scene, I think she's sort of, I mean, she's not the villain of the movie, but certainly within the context of the Cullen family, we're supposed to take Rosalie as like, the bitch, right? Because she's the one saying, like, why are we going to stick our necks out for Bella Swan? But, like, I don't know. She's kind of right. why are they?
Right.
What has this girl ever done? Who is she? Why did they immediately tell her this secret that they're vampires? And by the way, someone explained to me, I understand that Edward Cullen has been a teenager for years and years and years because he was turned into a vampire when he was a teenager. But why does that mean he always has to go to high school? Like, so that no one questions. Do they keep moving around? They're like nomadic and they move to a new town and he has to always enroll in high school.
Does he choose that age? Like, how does it work?
Well, no, he was turned.
He was turned. So
he doesn't get a choice. Okay. He's trapped as a teenager, but like, I don't know. I feel like, A, Robert Pattinson is like 25 or 26 when they shoot this movie, so Edward Cullen could probably pass for that as well and not have to spend his entire life in high school.
Right.
But also, I don't know. It's like, I guess it's like it's their cover story. They have to keep moving to a new town.
Right.
And he has to keep enrolling in high school, all of the Cullens do. It just seems like a really stupid way to live, but
it works great for this fantasy.
No, I know it does. Listen, it's so
okay, because beautiful. Again, he's everyone's dream. He just loves Bella unconditionally. Right. He wants to save her. He literally does more than once. He wants to protect her. He just wants to love her so much and forever, but he can't have sex with her.
You're
so
right.
It's like so safe.
Because
he takes her away from her family, but it's okay because it's for good reasons.
Right. Because and the whole thing about the sex, and people have talked about the Twilight movies as a sort of parable for abstinence. That Steffi Myers is sort of championing abstinence. But that's not really what she's doing. I mean, because it's not these characters who are making a choice not to have sex because they don't feel like they're ready or because they would rather wait until they're married. I mean, the movie gives a very concrete reason, even though it's a fucking stupid reason. It's like, once we start, I won't be able to stop and I'll end up, like, killing you, basically. So the movie provides a very real reason for why they abstained from sex. It's not about making a choice necessarily. But whatever, that's just more of the movie's total nonsense. It introduces a villain, the blonde ponytailed dude.
Oh, yeah.
For no good reason then, because, like, once Bella discovers that Edward is a vampire, I guess the movie has nowhere to go. Like, there's no drama. The whole drama of the first half is, why is he being so mean to me? What's his secret?
Right.
Halfway through, she finds out what it is, and it's like, uh-oh. We still have half a movie to go. So it introduces a ridiculous set of villains who are not really threatening, but at one point they attack Bella, and one guy bites her, and the venom hurts, and they have to save her. And
oh,
this
yeah,
all,
that's right.
Right? These are all beats in
that
the movie.
That was like in a giant warehouse or something?
Yeah. Like, do you remember any of this? I don't.
I mean,
all this half-formed, like, oh, yeah, these things happen in the movie, but there's no sense story or a flow
settings,
to any of these
the
events.
Settings don't necessarily connect for me. Like,
because
where were they?
Sort of
why were they in a
the
big
same.
Warehouse? Where
right.
was that big warehouse? What did it have to do with where they were? I don't know.
Right. And so, and here's where the movie's... So, after that happens, and then Bella is saved from her bite, and... Then they go to prom and they dance in the gazebo because, again, it's this masturbatory fantasy for 15-year-old girls who want to go to a prom that's just
Every
for them.
Every girl.
Right? Sorry.
Hey.
The prom is just for them, and they have their own personal gazebo, and it's covered in
right.
lights.
Wait,
and, right, exactly. None of it has to make any logical sense. And it's funny that you and I, that's what we're getting. We buy the whole vampire diamond skin thing. We're like, fine, that's...
Right. Right.
Again, that's
the problem with how
that's accepting the premise of the movie. Like,
right,
you
have
to be able
to
do
right.
that, exactly. But to accept some of this other extraneous shit when it's clearly just pandering to a very specific audience. But then.
It's just pandering, period.
Yeah.
I think it's just pandering to everyone.
So the movie basically ends with them kissing.
Yeah.
And I guess it could end. There, because there's nothing in the story that suggests we need...
Doesn't it end there?
No.
Oh.
There's nothing in this story that suggests that we need three or four more installments, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's no story left to tell, really. I guess we just assume Bella and Edward are going to be together forever.
Listen, there is a reason for these stories to continue. I don't mean to cut you off, but...
Yeah.
Somewhere down the road, she had to use the name Renesmee.
And she had to introduce
Renesmee.
The Native American shirtless werewolves.
Oh, yeah.
Who, by the way, I forget that Taylor Lautner is even in this movie.
Right.
He has very long hair.
Mm-hmm.
He's just sort of a side character. But actually, I think he's not bad in this movie. He seems like a nice kid.
Yeah.
His acting isn't nearly as wooden as it would be later. I guess because he's not asked to handle anything dramatic, you know?
Right.
So they're dancing, and you would think it ends there, but see, this is the 2000s. This is the era of horrible franchise filmmaking.
Oh.
And now, you know, Harry Potter had several installments, so now everything, Twilight has to have five installments, and The Hunger Games has to have three different chapters. And then when we're making the movie, we got to split the last book into two. We always split the last book into two because... we have half of a movie, and then we have a movie with a big battle, and that's the template for everything now. So, it cuts away from them dancing to a girl who's like the sidekick of the ponytail villain. There's three like villains that hang out together. Ponytail, dirty mustache guy.
Right.
Fake Mercutio.
Okay.
And curly haired girl.
Red hair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe she goes on to be like Bryce Dallas Howard in the sequels.
Oh.
Somebody didn't come back and was replaced by Bryce Dallas Howard.
Okay.
It might be this girl. Okay. It might not. I honestly have no idea. I couldn't tell you this girl's name. I couldn't tell you one thing about her. I know she hangs out with Dirty Mustache, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it cuts away from them to this girl in like her ridiculous fur-collared outfit. She turns towards the camera, kind of pissed, and then starts to walk away, and it switches to black and white, and then the credits come up. And it's the craziest fucking way to end this movie. Because, A, it implies that we know anything about this character or give a shit if she disapproves of their union. Readers of the book
probably do and probably are thinking, oh, wow.
But that's a garbage way to approach storytelling.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I guess...
When it's something as significant as the ending of your movie, I'm all for, like... Marvel movies do it all the time.
Right,
they have their little Easter eggs.
Right.
The Avengers has the
appearance. But the movie ends before that.
Right. I mean, I think it was a mistake in the Avengers to put Thanos in the end credits because 75% of the movie-going audience said, who was that and why should I care?
Right.
And it's just for those people that... And that's a mistake, I think. But at least that's separate from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is... the last thing you see in the movie. I mean, this comes up before the credits.
Right. And it's so like, you're
she's
like,
not
what?
A threatening
what is
villain.
That?
She's
what is
not
she?
Interesting.
What just
Why
happened?
Does it change to black and white?
Who cares?
What the hell is going on? Right. I mean, there's so many problems with it. But again, it's like, it's Catherine Hardwicke, and I don't blame her. I mean, maybe it's part of the text. Maybe it's a studio note. No, I'm not saying I blame Catherine Hardwicke. But it's like, we have to end it on a note that leaves open the possibility for the next chapter.
Right.
But what possibility? I mean, this is like the end of The Amazing Spider-Man, where it's like, leave him alone, random dude in a jail cell, and then it goes to black, and we don't understand what any of it means, and it's totally stupid. It's like, what does that really tell us? It tells us that one of the villains is still alive and doesn't like them dancing and wears a fur coat, or like a coat with a big furry collar. It doesn't really... hint at any further story to tell. All it says is one of them's not dead, but also I think two of them aren't dead. I don't think fake Mercutio's dead. It's just Dirty Mustache. So I don't understand.
Dirty Mustache, that's it for him?
There's so little about this movie that makes any goddamn sense to me. And every time I watch it, I swear to God, I try and keep an open mind. Because I don't want to be forced outside of the Twilight bubble. I mean, I recognize it's never really going to be for me, but I at least want to sort of understand the appeal. And I mean, I think, unfortunately, we do understand the appeal. It's just that the appeal is something kind of evil.
and we will probably never connect to it in a way. We're open-minded with it, but we'll just never connect to it.
No, obviously. Because, and again, it's not made for us, but I want to understand. I want to see something in it that I can say, okay, but at least it's got this and this and this. You know what I mean?
Right, sure.
And I don't think it has anything to offer anyone, except for the chance to sort of ogle Robert Pattinson and or Kristen Stewart, but neither of them is even remotely interesting. It's like, it's really just based on their physical appearances? I don't know. I mean, what's the appeal of Robert Pattinson? From the lady perspective.
He intensely loves Bella and wants to protect her and save her at all times. And so this translates. And I mean, we're not even talking about the fact that these two huge, they've become huge stars. So these two actors who have become huge stars also dated and I think are dating again for years, the whole length of these movies.
Right.
And like the years in between. I think that a big part of the audience loves that, loves following. I mean, it makes you think of like the old studio relationships sometimes, although this one, for everything we are supposed to believe, right, that this one has been real. Like they... Were they living together or, I don't know, or the kind of, whatever. Like, it just, it adds to the experience for right. so much of the audience, I think.
And
they see their chemistry because they think, oh, everything I read in People and Us Weekly, too, right, adds right. to, like, their chemistry on screen. They really love each other.
And I don't presume to know anything about them, but, like, the little bit I've seen, as
her.
Much as I have to say, like, boy, what do Edward and Bella see in one another? I ask myself, like, well, what do Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson see in one another, you know?
Yeah.
Because neither of them seems to be a really dynamic personality. But again,
I don't know. I he no hasn't idea. Been horrible yeah. in interviews.
No, he hasn't. He was on The Daily Show. He seemed okay. Like, I have to, you know, at least I know that they have a life that's separate from what I see.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're actual people. And so I have to believe that, yeah, they connect in some way. They're interesting in some way that I just don't know because I don't see that. Twilight presents us with none of that. Like, we see... We are presented with their entire lives. We know their entire characters. There's nothing that happens off screen that fills in the gaps of, like, why these two love each other.
And again, we haven't read
and
the books.
There's nothing there.
Right. We haven't read the books, but do you think that maybe this is a case of a movie that when the screenplay was written, everyone must have agreed, and everyone working on the film must have agreed that it's okay to just leave a ton of stuff out, like in terms of maybe backstory or characterization. Maybe it was...
Yeah,
maybe it was
I mean,
just agreed, like,
so.
The audience is going to come, or they're not. And if they do, they're going to, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, again,
although, for other movies that are made from books, I think it's the opposite. I think people, the filmmakers, kind of freak out, like, oh, we better get this right. Like, Hunger Games, would it have been as successful if they had really left things out? I mean,
right.
of course, every time a book is made into a movie, that happens. It has
right.
to. But
yeah, well, again, there's... Not to keep comparing it to these other sort of franchises
that are born
out of books.
New Star Wars 2014, 2016.
The ones that are specifically born out of books. But again, you take like the Harry Potter adaptations, and people criticize the first two Harry Potter movies for being nothing but sort of slavish, literal interpretations of the books, you know. But I feel like when they made those movies... They took so much care to get things right because they knew that they wanted to make something that lasted and they wanted to make something special and they knew they had something special and they didn't want to fuck it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they make these movies that aren't just for fans of the books. They make these movies that try to open up the universe of Harry Potter to
right,
everyone.
Right, right, right. Yeah, that's the big difference.
And Twilight seems right. very content to just... sell itself to the fans. And obviously there are enough fans that has proven to be incredibly lucrative.
Right.
So
and
it's a cynical decision that's been richly rewarded.
Right.
But it makes for garbage art.
Yeah, and I guess the fans, they don't care. That's not what they're going for, I guess. I mean, my Facebook
but I literally
news
don't
feed
understand
has people
going
to see
for.
It a second time
right.
today even.
Like
multiple
what?
People going to see it again.
But what are these people getting out of it? I truly do not understand.
Maybe.
And I've never talked to somebody
well, apparently the new
movies.
Film has a twist at the end.
I already know what the twist is.
What is it?
I'm not going to give it away.
Oh, please.
I'll tell you when we're done recording.
Oh, my God. Okay, you guys, great. Bye.
I've never talked to somebody maybe of the right age group or demographic who really loves the Twilight movies.
Yeah.
If I did, I would have to say, like, what do you like? What do you get out of these movies?
Almost anyone I've spoken with. People who love the books seem to tell me that it's just kind of fun and escapist and entertainment.
But isn't that true of anything? Like, why these more than others, I guess?
I think what they're not saying is that they wish that they also had someone who was saving them and protecting them
yeah.
and loving them unconditionally. I don't know.
I'm
I know
so
that
fun.
Sounds so simplistic, by the way, to keep repeating that, but I really do
no,
think that a lot of the girls who are responding to this movie are responding for that reason. And
for
again,
reason
going back to Take This Waltz, if I had, you know, if someone's watching Take This Waltz and they're in sort of a, you know, not so happy marriage, they may be responding to it a lot more strongly. They may, you know, they may be thinking like, oh, that's me, or I want this, or I want, you know.
Yeah, but
that's human nature,
Take
I guess.
Take This Waltz comes down on the side of like, you're the problem.
Yeah, it does, but I don't think everyone sees it that
no,
way.
No,
I really don't.
I agree. And I understand the notion of wish fulfillment as being appealing. It's the same reason that people, boys, young boys, whatever, want to go see Spider-Man. You know, it's like, hey, wouldn't it be neat if I had superpowers and could save people? But
what's my wish fulfillment?
But Take This Waltz. Spider-Man also presents you with interesting characters, or at least one very interesting character at the center. And I'm, by the way, I'm talking about the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, so not the new one. This movie does none of that. It has a colorful world. It has interesting action sequences. I mean, it has all these things going for it that I don't think Twilight does. So, I mean, I understand wish fulfillment, but it doesn't make any sense to me. I'm almost tempted to see the last movie.
I'm tempted to see them all.
Well, at some point, we probably will, although think about how much of a drag it was to sit through this one, and I think this one might be the best one. But the last one, more than one person has said that there's a giant battle at the end, because, of course, every one of these series now has to end with it. Everything's Return of the King. Everything has a giant battle. But a couple of people, specifically Devin Faraci, said that the battle is so great that it makes the whole movie worth seeing.
Ah.
And so, of course, I'm like, ooh, I like battles as much as I'm annoyed by everything ending with a giant battle. I'm like, I want to see a Twilight movie that has something in it that works.
Right.
But it's also really interesting. Oh, God. There's so much else that we should see first.
I know.
It's also really interesting, and this is the last thing I'll say. Each installment has had a different director.
Okay.
The last two, because, of course, the final book was split into two books, were directed by Bill Condon, who's a director that people really like and respect. And especially a lot of the sort of internet fanboy community, because he's done a bunch of horror stuff. He made Gods and Monsters, and they're just big, big fans of Bill Condon. And it's been really interesting to read some of the online critics twist themselves into knots to not blame any of Breaking Dawn's shortcomings on Bill Condon. It's like, Bill Condon's great. He does what he can. Oh. It's this, this, and this, and this that don't work. Whereas with every other installment, the material has been blamed, the actors
fired,
have been blamed,
Catherine
but
Hardwick.
So have the directors, you know, and it's just really interesting that nobody wants to say that Bill Condon couldn't make it work. And by the way, maybe no one could make it work. I understand that, but some of the responsibility has to be in the hands of the director, I would think. Are we done talking about Twilight?
I think so.
Okay. There's so much more I feel like we could say, but there's also, like, what else are we
going to
say?
Right, well, again, I loved that piece that you mentioned.
Yeah.
I haven't read it. I wish I would have read it right before this. But hopefully people go check it out and then come back and write some comments and discuss with us.
Nice, absolutely.
Maybe my wish fulfillment movie was Can't Buy Me Love.
Maybe.
Because I married a nerd.
Wow.
But you didn't have to pay me to date you.
That's not entirely true. I'm trying to think of like a line from Can't Buy Me Love to quote to end this podcast. But I
totally
can't.
Geeked.
Well, no,
sheep.
I know that one. But I was really trying to think of like the end when they're on the lawnmower. What are the last lines in the movie?
Oh, definitely. That is the last word of the movie. Definitely. And
but what does he say that she responds with? Definitely.
Shoot, something about.
They're like negotiating.
Yeah, like she hops on the back of the lawnmower. They ride off
into the sunset.
Her hair is so awesome. She puts this black hat on, her blonde wavy hair. When I was little, I just thought that was like the coolest look. Oh my gosh.
Anyway, thank you guys for listening. And remember, you can always find our website at fthismovie.net. And happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys. Thanks for listening. Definitely.